Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy wherever they get their podcasts.
Delivering all the news, the informed views, and just telling great motorsport stories since 2003. Powered by theracetalk.com. This is On The Grid.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of On The Grid here on mypodcasthouse.com or on the radio show Limited RS1. Thank you for joining us. Big show coming your way. We're going to have a chat to Mark Winterbottom. Big milestone coming up for Frosty. 600 supercar races next weekend in Perth. It'll happen on the first race too, so you can get over and done with nice and early. But that'll be great to talk to Frosty about that and also his memories of the past 20 years of driving in supercars. Mark Walker and Richard Crowell also to join me to talk about what's been a big week in motorsport. As always, all that to come right here on The Grid.
You're listening to the latest from around the motorsport world. On The Grid.
All right, joining me as always off the top of the program, Richard Crowell. Good afternoon, buddy.
Hi, Shebex. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you, mate. Fantastic. How was your weekend? Nice and quiet?
Another big week in sport. Spent most of it watching the footy, I'm not going to lie. It was all based within about 15 k's of home, which was excellent, but lots of motorsport to talk about as well. So looking forward to diving into all of that as the show progresses, Tony.
We certainly are. And, of course, supercars making their way off to Perth for the next round of the championship. And a man that's been in the series now for 20 years, his first year as an enduro driver, then full-time the year after that. And he comes up to 600 supercar races. His name is Mark Frosty Winterbottom, and he joins us for a chat now. G'day, Frosty. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, guys. How are you?
Fantastic. Thanks, mate. Congratulations. What an amazing milestone.
Yeah, it is. It's it's funny in this sport, you don't really think about stats yourself, but there's so many PR guys at the teams that remind you of stats regularly. And, I knew this year was 20 years, so I knew it was my 20th year, which I thought was really cool. You know, I thought that was a good number. And then, yeah, the 600 races, I guess, it's a great number, but then to see what company you're in is really cool. You know, I know Lowndes is number one, I think, and Garth's second most. And now to be in that 600 club and, you know, join an elite group's a pretty cool stat. So, hard to know how you feel about it when you're still racing because you're still thinking about what's to come. It's a great achievement and one I'm really proud of.
Yeah, I was going to ask, Frosty, is it a source of pride? Do you look back and go, you know, I'm accomplished things that not an enormous number of people in our sport with its massive history, its rich history, have actually achieved in their lifetimes?
Yeah, it's funny, you know, like you race the sport and there's so many factors that you can, I guess, call an achievement, you know, like we all think race results and trophies and that's an achievement, but to survive in a sport for so long in something that's super competitive, you know, I think we've got one of the most competitive forms of motorsport in the world. It's tough. It's tough to get a drive, let alone maintain one. You know, I think when I was young, getting into the sport was the dream, but you know, you never thought, once you get in, you never know how long you're going to last. You know, that's just sport. You work your backside off to get in, and then you last a year and 2 years and 3 years and now 20, having the bosses and the sponsors and, you know, team owners and crew and engineers and everyone that has to go with it to make this sport work, support you and have trust in you for so many years. That's the thing I feel really, really proud of because, you're not just driving, you have crews that follow your places. You have people that sign up to teams because you're there. That's a cool feeling, you know, and you get to drive the ship, I guess. And That's probably the thing I'm proudest of, that people like me and respect me, and that goes a long way.
Over the 20 years, there's been a few iterations of Mark Frosty Winterbottom. There was the young gun who came into Larkin Motorsport to kick off, then into the pin-up boy, I suppose, with the Pepsi Mac type stuff and all the things that went around that, to the champion, Mark Winterbottom, and now to the sort of, I don't want to say it, but the elder statesman, Mark Winterbottom. How have you coped with those ever-progressing changes of you as a person and also as a driver?
I think it's funny. Like, I think, different things motivate you for this sport. And The great part is it's always changing. What your role is always changes, you know. Like I think, you know, the years at Tickford were fantastic and very successful. You know, we had a very strong team and you know, we were fighting for championships and we were the Factory Ford team. It was a pretty cool team to race for, you know. I think I was very lucky to get into that position and, you know, I hope I did, you know, with the faith they gave me, I hope I repaid it. But and then your next chapter, you know, with Charlie has been a lot of fun. You know, I think getting, you know, it's hard work getting to a team where the smaller resources, you know, when I joined him, he was 23rd on the grid. But, you know, he's a very passionate boss who is so successful in his life, and the only thing that's not winning at the moment is his race team. So, you know, we're putting all the things in place to try and make sure that happens. But, you know, joining him has been a lot of, you know, a different role, definitely a different role as well. So, yeah, you're always changing. You've got to be versatile in this sport and know what your role is at the team, because ultimately, like I said just before, people come to work on teams because you're there and things like that. You know, the next challenge is to get Charlie's team to the front. I don't think we're that far away, which, you know, might seem like a surprising comment sometimes to some, but I feel like we're actually in a good position now where, you know, I think podiums and race wins can happen this year. So, yeah, always playing a different role, but ultimately, end of the day, it's about winning. You know, one person wins and 25 tell you what they did right or wrong and how they're going to change it, you know. So your role's always changing, but the same goal doesn't, and that's winning races.
We'll talk about where Team 18's at in a minute, but I just wanted to reflect on your Tickford time for performance racing, or the many iterations that it sort of evolved through during your time there. But I don't think your results with that team are given enough cred in the sport. But when you go back and look at it, so across a decade, you never finished lower than sixth in the championship. You were in the top three in the championship seven occasions. You won a Bathurst and a title. I mean, that's an incredibly long period of sustained success for one driver at one team in this sport. And you have to look at people like Scaife at HRT or Lowndes at HRT before you can find an equal to that. So just talk to that period, Mark, and what it was like having that sustained period of running at the front of, as you said, one of the most competitive circuit racing championships in the world.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was a good, really good part of your life. You know, you'd rock up to a race meeting knowing that you can win. You rock up to that day and you're there to win, and if you don't, you haven't done a good enough job. You know, that was, so a lot of pressure comes with that. But as a driver, you know, I always have thrived off pressure, and if you've, you know, as long as it's realistic pressure, if the car's there to do it, then you're paid to do it. You know, I've always loved that, rocking up to a track and being a chance to win. And you know, it was a really good team. Tickford for Performance Racing Pro Drive was a really strong team, you know, and you were fighting for the blue oval. That was a really cool feeling and a good part of your life. And yeah, winning Bathurst and winning the championship and coming so close so many times, and you know, that side. And then also, I guess, being there and seeing guys like Chaz come through and Cam as teammates and Richo and Davo, and it was a very strong team and a really good environment. So, no, I loved it. But, you know, rocking up week in, week out, I think it's funny, you know, people these days talk about, and it's a bad way to look at it in my opinion, but people always say how long it's been since a podium or how long it's been since a win. But, you know, I could roll back with, I've had over 100 and something podiums, and, you know, the stats that I get confused about, people think about the droughts, not about what you've done. Mm. So, you know, that era I could, you know, a very good part of my life, really, and, yeah, really good results. So, but, you know, that's what the sport is, isn't it? You have good equipment and you're the person behind the wheel to do it. And, yeah, we got a lot of good results here with a lot of good people, really, and great sponsors and great supporters, and you know, a lot of that, I guess, belief in Ford light at that team. So it was a great team to help get to the front.
And let's say at Wanneroo in a week's time you lift Team 18 and they win a race. How would that stack up against those big moments at Tickford? What level of satisfaction would that deliver you? Because I get the feeling it would be pretty big.
Yeah, I'm super motivated to see Charlie with a first place trophy. That's I got a lot of respect for Charlie, and he really works hard at, and really wants it. And him and I are very, very similar people. So to win it with that team, you know, some of that team have only ever worked at Team 18, and they haven't tasted the success that, you know, I've been lucky enough to taste. You know, my expectation is to win every race. That's kind of what you sign up to do. And there's factors that stop you otherwise, I guess. But you know, the guys and girls at the team haven't had that win, so that'd be amazing. But my other opinion on it is that you want to win one race, but I don't want to be a flash in the pan. I want Team 18 to win like that Tickford days, where you roll up to the track and say, "Hey, we finished fifth. That's not good enough." That was the Tickford mentality, and that was how it had to be back then. But it takes time. You can't be unrealistic. So you take one win and a couple of bad ones and another win. But to get in a position where we're competitive week in, week out, fighting for podiums, and anything less is, you know, not a fail, but not good enough. That's where I want the team to be. So, you'd start with that win first, be pretty happy, and to come in and see the crew and all the work and efforts, and the first time to see them at a podium getting trophies would be really cool.
I was just about to say that, and I don't want to be one of those people that comes up with stats and it's been a while since a podium, but for Team 18, there hasn't been a podium yet. You've had plenty of bloody fourths, be close, but you just haven't got to that step yet. I feel that would be as much of a win first up, just to get onto a step.
Yeah, it would be, but I don't know. I'm wired different, Shebex. I think, like, for me, third is like two behind first. I'm just wired. I'm wired different. So you get a trophy for third, you don't get one for fourth, but does third mean? I don't know. I like, obviously, I like trophies and champagne. It tastes good, but I want to win. I want to win the race. I don't want to necessarily finish third and fill the cabinet full of third places. I want to fill them with wins. So, I think we're in a pretty good place. Like, I think Grand Prix, we showed a lot of speed. We topped a practice session. We were probably top five pace in every quali. Our race pace wasn't good enough, but it's easier to make a fast car survive than a slow car go fast, you know. So, and then just got to get through lap one and all those dramas that went with it. That's probably, with 600 races, I got more experience than that. So if I'd had hindsight, I'd put my car in different positions at the Grand Prix. But, I think we're closer than what it looks. So, it'd be an incredible feeling, but doesn't matter if it's the 600th race or 500th race or 510th, I'll take a win anytime. So, but would be nice to do it in Perth for sure.
Gen 3, where's it at? The brief racing we got at Albert Park was awesome. It was a hell of a show. That struck me as being a really big tick for those cars and a good test on a high-speed circuit. I know there's a lot more to come, but where are you at? Where are you at with your package and the evolution of not just within Team 18, but the car overall and as a driver, what you're experiencing so far?
Can I add to it? Yeah. Has this been the craziest start to a season for you guys?
Well, it's I think the car's really good to drive. Like, I like it. It's getting mixed opinions up and down pit lane, but I thought the previous car was. It's good if you had a ridiculously large engineering business, but not great if you were a smaller team that couldn't go down and build something new. So, for me, I really like the car. I think having a catalogue where you can buy stuff, is really cool. And the car actually to drive, it's not perfect. They don't do what the other car did, but it kind of reminds me of the early days of why I fell in love with this car and this sport, you know. So, I really enjoy driving it. Racing-wise, they don't crash well. That's the that's the downside. You know, I had the minor hit on in one spot and I almost ripped the rear end out of it, where last year's car would have just pressed on and dropped a tenth and plucked another gear and off we go. So, very fragile in that way. So there's a few things that need to be tidied up on it for sure, where you can't just have a small hit and the rear end fall out. So, and then the racing, like you said, at one point I was going through the fast left right thinking I was going to just aero wash the guy behind me big time, and he passed me in the next corner. So it's actually nice. You can follow and a faster car will pass you. That's just how it is. So I think it's good. I think it's really, they've done a good job with the car and stuff. We've just got to strengthen up a few bits. And obviously even the rules are down to what bolt you can use on the car. So you can't just go and fudge, you know, something to make it stronger. It's all got to be done by the rules. So as a sport, at least when there's one problem, we all get exposure to it and it gets fixed. And, you know, I think it's great for the sport. I think it's going to get through these teething issues and take off. And they look cool. They actually sound really cool too in the car, like being an enthusiast or whatever. Mm. When I first drove it, I was kind of revving it. They were telling me to stop revving it in the pits. I just liked the note of it. I thought it was a full Bogan spec coming out. But, you know, and that's why I guess, you know, when people say, you know, when you do a lot of races and how you stay motivated, like if you don't enjoy driving this car, like it's so much fun. It actually is a lot of fun. And you sound like that teenage kid again, you know. It's really revamped it. So it's a good car.
Was there a bit of a concern for you guys when we had the couple of fires to the cars? Was there sort of a thing that went through the garage just to say, maybe we need to do this, maybe we need to do that, watch out for this?
Well, it wasn't affecting the Camaro. So I guess from my point of view, yeah. I hadn't seen it happening, and it looks like it was the bit on the Ford that was catching it was a little bit worse on the Ford than what the Camaro was. But, you know, I've been on fire before at Bathurst. You know, it's kind of one of those things, and never do you fear that you're going to get hurt or anything like that, you know. So if every car caught on fire, you'd still start the next race going, well, it's not going to happen to me. That's just how we're wired. Don't know if it's just we're not intelligent, we're wired different, but it doesn't, yeah, you never ever think of something like that, you know, happening to your car. It's like it's always someone else's till it is yours, you know. But yeah, it is a concern, you know, when you see guys trying to jump out of it. And the worst part's when they spray the extinguisher in the car because it cuts all the oxygen and it literally feels like you're choking and you're starved of oxygen. That's the flames are not scary. It's the aftermath that, you know, you cough up that fire extinguisher stuff for the next week and you can feel it burning up the lungs. Like that's what happened after Bathurst. So, yeah, I feel for those guys that had it. But you know, like I said, I didn't roll out Sunday wondering if mine was going to happen. You just press on, you know. Yeah. It's one of those things. Unless it happens to you, it seems like it's not a problem in this sport. But, yeah, it's a couple of cars that look pretty bad on TV for sure.
Yeah, it wasn't a great look. And the crashability thing's weird because NASCAR had exactly the same problem with their new car they rolled out last year. They just don't crash as well as the previous gen cars. I don't know if it's 10 years of development or whatever, but yeah, it's an odd one. Last one from me, you and Scott Pye have been teammates now for a couple of years at Team 18. Just talk a little bit about that relationship, and especially now in this new era with the new car, how important it is. You got two quite experienced guys in the sport now, a couple hundred starts at least between the two of you. How's that paying off for Team 18 to help develop these cars and get them to the front even quicker?
Yeah, I bumped his race start average up, haven't I, for the test? So 450 each sounds good, doesn't it? No, he's good. Like I think, you know, having Scott there and myself, we really push each other quite hard, and to the point where Charlie felt comfortable that we don't need other teams' data and stuff like that. You know, like we can use each other's data well. The two engineers both work together really closely. So, you know, we just got to make sure that we're both, you know, and we are asking for the same things, which is great. We drive the car. A good car, you just drive. You know, it's funny. Like people say this person's driving style is this and that guy's. If the car's fast, you find a way to get it around. And he's had a very similar upbringing to me where he's had to hustle his whole life a bit. So he drives the car hard. He drives it well. And, yeah, we drive very similar. So, yeah, he's been good. And the new car, I think we can keep developing, keep pushing each other, and one of us hopefully get that result quickly. And if one gets it, the other car's going to get it straight after because they are reacting very similar and driving the same. So, yeah, he's been good. And, yeah, let's see if we can get these cars up the front together and work hard together and fight each other at the end of the year. That'd be nice.
Nice.
Well, last one from me, mate. You love the outdoors lifestyle, and it seems to fit in well with what you're doing at the moment. You get the opportunity to head up the Murray and do some fishing and some four-wheel driving, and the kids are growing up and all that sort of stuff. What's the future? Well, do you sit down now at 600 races and think, what is the future for me? Where are we going with this?
No, not really. You know, you always people get distracted, I think, in life, and they always, you know, if I do a good job with supercars, I don't need to do anything else. So if I win races, I'll keep getting employed, and that's my only focus right now is to go to Perth and just dominate all three. That's, like, sounds arrogant, but that's my focus, and I'm not really thinking about anything else, because if you do what you do well, and people are going to keep employing you, you know, and that's my goal. But I'm lucky. I get, you know, I think that's what's kept your motivation high, is when you get away from the track, you actually can switch off and do other things. And I don't own a hotted up car that I work on during the week. I don't own a race car. I don't own a go-kart. I don't own anything like that. I get right away from it. We go basketball with the kids. We play footy. They dabbled in a go-kart the other day and still want to play football and basketball. So we're not a... which is good. It doesn't mean I have to work as long now because it's cheaper. But that, you know, keeps you grounded and keeps you... I can't wait for Perth. And it's because even after one of the toughest weekends we've had at the Grand Prix, you don't dwell on it. You come home, you cuddle your kids, you know, do your stuff at home, and then rock up at Perth ready to go. And it keeps you young and fresh. So, who knows? Who knows what it is? But, try and keep winning races. And if I'm doing that, I'm doing a good job.
Did you catch dinner, mate? Did you catch dinner today?
I have too big a family, so when I come home, we've put the barbecue on and it's not for fish. So,
well, mate, hopefully that win isn't too far away. As you said, let's hope it is this weekend in Perth. 600th race comes up, race one for you of the weekend on Saturday. We wish you all the best in that and for the remainder of the season, mate.
Thanks, mate. I appreciate it.
Good on you, Mark Winterbottom, joining us here on The Grid.
There's more great motorsport stories coming next on The Grid.
As we say g'day to Mark Walker, who joins us for the second part of the program. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Tony Shebeke. Hello, Richard Crayola. I meant to do a welfare check on the weekend. Were you all right without commentating stuff?
I haven't watched as much footy, and we're talking Aussie rules football here for those of you listening internationally, in a long time. And I will admit, fully drawn into the gather round concept. And for those that might not know, the Australian Football League played all 9 games of round 5 in South Australia and started Thursday night, Friday, all the way through the weekend. I was very, very interested to see how the AFL and the South Australian government did it, because I think there are a lot of lessons to be learned about how we promote our sport. And the interesting thing for mine was that we do gather round 20 times a year, really, when you look at it. The Adelaide 500 is a gather round for motorsport. It's most of the best teams all coming into the one spot. You know, Perth will be similar. You know, the major straight circuit events are very, very similar. So it was interesting to see it from our little world, where we do tend to bring a majority of the top series and teams together on regular occasions, and watch the AFL experience that for the first time. And maybe it's something we take for granted. I don't know. But it was a genuinely very interesting weekend, aside from the fact that South Australia absolutely slayed it, and it was a terrific event, and it'll come back for years to come. But really interesting experience watching that and not thinking too much about car racing, which was great.
I do feel for South Australians, though, at the moment, because it seems like your premier may become the next prime minister.
Good luck. You can't have him. No.
All spotlights are on him at the moment, though, aren't they?
Well, do you know what, Shebex? When you get a politician that actually is a decent bloke, people tend to gravitate that way. So the fact they've got some policies to back it up is a remarkable bonus, but no one really cares about that. He's just a good lad. But, they've done a nice job. They've delivered. They brought the Adelaide 500 back. They've got the footy, the motorsport festival. They're golf going hard, and that's great. Sorry?
Is it the golf this week, the Live Golf?
Yeah, the dodgy golf, yeah. Yep. Well. We like the Saudis. They're fine.
The Vic government's had a big chop too with their talk this week about actually having that motorsport complex come to life at Avalon. And they're going to put $1.6 million into the groundworks for organising it. And Motorsport Australia stepped up and said, we're going to run the joint for you. So very interesting. Built on Commonwealth land there at the Avalon Airfield. It's in the middle of nowhere. No one lives near there. It's Perfect. A noisy place anyway. There is access to the freeway, so long as you're not having a massive event there, which
like an air show
turns to custard. But it's been mooted to happen there for such a long time now, and finally it looks like the wheels are in motion that we'll see it happen. And it's something that needs to happen because Sandown's got a finite life. It's, you know, whatever talk goes on there that they're going to keep the venue alive for, let's say, 7 years to cover the renovations at the other horse tracks in Melbourne, there's no guarantee that the Melbourne Racing Club are going to keep motorsport there. They've got a pro-Sandown board in place, but they're pro-Sandown horses. They're not pro-Sandown motorsport, and there's been nothing said from them that they're going to keep motorsport there for the long term, and there's been nothing said with motorsport having a seat at the table for the long-term planning at Sandown. So having something in place by 2027 at Avalon is a good thing for the industry.
You're both Victorians.
Am I?
Let's be honest. You're there now. Okay. What do we think? I mean, from an outsider looking in, that location strikes me as being just about perfect. You tap into Geelong, which is 500,000 people, western suburbs of Melbourne, perfect. Even if you're down the other side of Melbourne,